Welcome back to the Deep Dive, where we like to dig in and really get our hands dirty with some of the ideas that shape how we live our lives. And today, we are going to be exploring a really fascinating framework, something called the Eightfold Path.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of people might associate that with Buddhism or spiritual traditions.
Right.
But we're going to be looking at this as a practical guide for really anybody who wants to improve their well-being.
Yeah.
You know, improve their relationship.
That's it.
Improve their life overall. And our source material for this deep dive is an article called Applying the Noble Eightfold Path in Schools. And as I was reading this, I was thinking, wow, there's some really powerful ideas in here that go way beyond just the classroom setting. Yeah. So that's what we're going to be talking about today.
I think what's really exciting about the Eightfold Path is that it does give us these actionable steps. And it's not just philosophy. You know, it's something that we can actually put into practice to really improve our lives. And as you mentioned, these ideas resonate with thinkers throughout history, from ancient philosophers like Marcus Aurelius all the way to modern thinkers like Eckhart Tolle. And we're going to kind of see those connections as we go through these different steps of the path.
Yeah, I was really struck by that as I was reading the article. It's like, oh, yeah, I've heard this before. You know, I've read this in different forms from all these different people throughout time. But it's like here it is all kind of laid out in one concise system. So maybe we can kind of jump right into it.
Yeah, let's do it.
The first step on the path is right view.
Okay.
And it's all about seeing reality clearly.
Yeah.
And particularly the law of cause and effect. So I'm curious from your perspective, like how does understanding cause and effect actually help us to make better decisions in our daily lives?
Well, it really invites us to recognize that our actions, our thoughts even, our words, they all have consequences. And instead of just reacting impulsively all the time, you know, we can become more mindful of the ripple effects that our choices create.
Right.
You know, for example, think about just a simple decision like, you know, buying something, buying a product from a company. Maybe that company is known for having unethical practices or something. That's an example of where, you know, our choices have consequences.
Right.
Or even, you know, something that we say, a harsh word spoken in anger can damage a relationship. So right view challenges us to pause for a moment and really truly consider the impact of our choices.
Yeah, it's so easy to just get caught up in the moment.
Yeah.
And, you know, react without really thinking it through.
Absolutely.
But if we take that time to pause and really consider, okay, what's going to be the long-term impact of this decision?
Yeah.
I think that can make a huge difference.
It's like that space between stimulus and response.
Yeah.
Where we have the power to choose.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
So right view is about seeing that bigger picture.
Yeah.
What about right intention? The article mentioned Immanuel Kant.
Okay.
And his idea that our intentions should be universalizable.
Yeah.
Which is the big word.
It is.
But basically the idea is that if everyone acted on our intentions, would it create a better world?
Yeah, that's a really powerful way to think about it. So intention encourages us to go beyond just our own self-interest and to consider the well-being of others.
Yeah.
It's about aligning our actions with a greater good.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And, you know, we see examples of this all over the place. Think about the rise of, you know, conscious consumerism.
Right.
Where people are making decisions about what to buy based on, you know, a company's ethics or their impact.
Yeah.
Or you know, the idea of purpose-driven careers, where people are seeking work that contributes to something larger than themselves.
Yeah.
So these are all kind of modern expressions of
intention. Yeah, it makes you kind of stop and think, are my goals truly in line with my values?
Absolutely.
Are they contributing to something positive in the world?
It's a great question. It's a question we all need to ask ourselves.
Yeah, that's a deep one. Okay, so we've got right view, we've got right intention.
Mm-hmm.
The next one is right speech.
Right speech.
And, you know, this is all about the importance of mindful communication, you know, being careful with our words to avoid misunderstandings.
Absolutely.
To avoid, you know, hurt feelings.
Yeah, it's amazing how much damage a careless word can do.
It really is. And so right speech encourages us to be more thoughtful.
Yeah.
About what we're saying.
Absolutely.
And how we're saying it.
And I think a really helpful tool here is what's known as the Socratic filter. Have you ever heard of this?
I've heard of Socrates, but I don't know about the filter.
Okay, so the Socratic filter is three questions that you ask yourself before you speak. The first question is it true?
Okay.
Second question, is it kind?
Right.
And the third question, is it necessary?
I like that.
So if what you're about to say doesn't pass that filter. You know, maybe it's better left unsaid, right? Speech challenges us to be both truthful and compassionate in our communication.
And I think that's something that we could all use a little bit more of these days.
Absolutely.
Especially with social media and everything.
Yeah, it's so easy to just, you know, fire off a tweet or a comment without really thinking about the impact.
Exactly. All right, so we've got right view, right intention, right speech. The next step is right action. And this one is all about acting ethically, taking responsibility for our impact. And, you know, this one really reminded me of Aristotle's virtue ethics.
Oh, yeah.
Where, you know, our actions over time shape our character.
Absolutely. You're right on to connect those ideas. You know, it's not just about doing the right thing in an isolated instance. It's about developing a pattern of ethical behavior.
Right.
And the article gives some great examples, you know, things like environmental protection or supporting vulnerable communities. These are all examples of action.
Right. And so it's not just about, you know, me as an individual doing the right thing. It's also about contributing to a more just and compassionate society.
Exactly. It has that individual and that societal dimension.
Yeah. That's really fascinating. Okay. So now we get to a step that I think might make some people a little uncomfortable.
Okay.
And that is right livelihood.
Right. Livelihood.
Now, I love this quote by Thoreau. He said, live deliberately.
Yeah.
And I feel like that really captures the essence of right livelihood.
It does.
But is it really about, like, finding a job that aligns perfectly with our values?
You know, it's not necessarily about finding that perfect job, which can be kind of an elusive ideal.
Yeah.
But it's more about consciously choosing how we earn a living.
Okay.
And really looking at, you know, is the work that I'm doing ethical? Is it sustainable?
Okay.
Do I support companies that are aligned with my values? Do I use my skills and talents in a way that benefits others and the planet?
Right.
These are the kinds of questions that livelihood invites us to consider.
I think that's a really important point because, you know, for some people, it might be possible to find that perfect job that really aligns with everything. But for a lot of people, that's just not realistic.
Right.
So it's more about, okay, within my current situation, how can I be more mindful about the work that I'm doing and the impact that it's having?
Exactly.
And, you know, it's interesting. The article talks about how there's this growing trend of sustainable businesses.
Yeah.
Socially responsible businesses.
Absolutely.
And I think that speaks to the fact that more and more people are looking for work that feels meaningful and purpose driven.
For sure.
But I think the question is, what about those people who are maybe stuck in a job that doesn't feel aligned with their values?
Right.
What advice would you give to someone in that situation?
That's a tough one, you know, because it's a real dilemma. You got to make a living, but you also want to feel good about the work that you're doing.
Exactly.
It's that balance, isn't it? It kind of speaks to this larger theme that runs through the whole Eightfold Path.
Yeah.
This challenge of finding balance in a world that often pulls us in so many different directions.
Yeah, absolutely. And that kind of leads us perfectly into the next step, which is
effort.
And this one is all about finding that sustainable pace, not burning ourselves out, but also, you know, still putting in the work
absolutely
to achieve our goals. It's like walking a tightrope.
It really is about finding that middle path, not pushing ourselves to the point of exhaustion, but at the same time, not becoming complacent, you know, not giving up on our goals and aspirations.
Right.
It's, you know, it's like if you were training for a marathon, you need consistent effort over time, not just, you know, bursts of intense energy.
Right.
And just like marathon runner needs rest days, we need to build in time for recovery and rejuvenation.
So how do you know if you're pushing too hard or not hard enough?
That's a great question. And I think it's different for everyone. But some common signs that you might be overdoing it are if you're feeling constantly drained or irritable. Or you're losing interest in things that you normally enjoy. That could be a sign that you need to back off a little bit. Yep. On the other hand, if you're constantly procrastinating or you're feeling unmotivated, that could be a sign that you need to, you know, ramp up your effort a bit.
So it's all about kind of tuning in
absolutely
to how you're feeling.
Yeah.
Both physically and mentally.
Yeah.
I'm starting to see how all of these steps really build on each other.
They're all interconnected.
Right.
They're not just, you know, separate ideas.
And so right effort kind of sets the stage for the next two steps.
Yeah.
Which are right mindfulness and right concentration.
Mindfulness and concentration, two very important qualities, especially in today's world.
I know, right? Like with all the distractions.
All distractions.
And everything going on.
It's so easy to get pulled in a million different directions.
Let's dive into those next. We'll talk about right mindfulness and right concentration.
Yeah.
And
we'll see how they connect to all of these other ideas that we've been talking about.
Sounds good. So right mindfulness, what is that all about?
So mindfulness is the ability to be present in the moment, to be aware of our thoughts, our feelings, and sensations without judgment.
So it's like hitting the pause button.
Exactly.
On that constant mental chatter.
Yes.
That's always going on in our heads.
Yeah, it's like taking a step back and just observing what is happening without getting caught up in the story.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But how do you actually do that? I mean, it's easier said than done, right?
It is. It is. Yeah. But there are definitely some practical things that we can do to cultivate more mindfulness in our lives.
Okay, what are some of those?
Well, even small moments of mindfulness can make a big difference. So, for example, you know, you could try focusing on your breath for a few minutes each day.
Okay.
Pay attention to the sensations of your body as you walk or eat.
Okay.
Engage in activities that bring you joy. And really try to fully immerse yourself in the experience.
So it's not just about, like, formal meditation.
Right.
It's about bringing that awareness.
Yeah.
To everyday activity.
Everything you do.
Okay. And then right concentration kind of builds on that.
It does.
So what is right concentration all about?
So right concentration is the ability to focus our attention on a single object or task.
Mm.
Whether it's, you know, a meditation object, a creative project, or even just listening attentively to someone speaking. It's about training the mind to be steady and clear, free from distractions.
Man, that sounds really hard, especially in today's world.
I know, it's a challenge. But the good news is that concentration is like a muscle. The more we practice it, the stronger it gets.
Okay, so how do we actually practice that?
Well, there are lots of different techniques, but one that I find really helpful is the Pomodoro technique.
I've heard of that.
Have you?
Yeah.
So with the Pomodoro technique, you set a timer for 25 minutes, and you work on a single task with complete focus, and then you take a five-minute break.
Okay.
And it's amazing how much more productive you can be when you eliminate those distractions.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And just really concentrate on one thing at a time.
I might have to try that.
I highly recommend it.
So it seems like right mindfulness and right concentration, they really go hand in hand.
They do. They do.
One kind of supports the other.
Yeah. When we practice mindfulness, we become more aware of when our minds are wandering.
Okay.
And then right concentration helps us to gently guide our attention back to the present moment.
It's like a dynamic duo.
It is. It is.
Of mental fitness.
That's a great way to put it.
So we've covered 6 of the 8 steps now.
Yeah, we're making progress.
And I'm really starting to see how all of these principles are interconnected.
Absolutely.
They're not just individual steps. They all work together to create a more balanced and fulfilling life.
And it's not just us saying that. You know, these ideas have been explored by many great thinkers.
Yeah.
Throughout history.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I really want to talk about next.
Okay.
We've talked about some of those connections to people like Marcus Aurelius and Eckhart Tolle.
Right.
So let's dive into that a little bit more.
Okay, let's do it.
And see how these ancient principles connect with some of the you know, the great minds of the past.
The wisdom traditions.
Yeah. All right, so let's start with Marcus Aurelius, Roman emperor, Stoic philosopher.
Yeah.
He talked a lot about, you know, having power over our minds. Not over outside events.
Right.
So how does that connect with the Eightfold Path?
Well, Marcus Aurelius's emphasis on controlling our thoughts and reactions aligns perfectly with right mindfulness. Stoicism, much like Buddhism, recognizes that true peace comes from within.
Okay.
From our ability to choose how we respond to circumstances.
This is not about like forcing the world to bend to our will. It's about mastering our own inner world.
That's it. It's about recognizing that we can't always control what happens to us, but we can control our reactions.
Which is a really powerful idea.
Yeah.
And that kind of connects with what we were talking about earlier with Immanuel Kant.
Oh, yeah.
And right intention.
Right.
You know, his idea that our actions should be guided by principles that could be universalized.
Yeah.
That seems to resonate with right intention.
Absolutely. Both Kant and the Buddha emphasize the importance of acting from a place of moral duty, considering the well-being of others in our decision-making.
Right. So it's not enough to just do the right thing.
It's not enough.
Our motivations also have to be pure.
Yes. Our intentions matter.
So like a modern example, if I'm donating to a charity, but I'm only doing it to get a tax write-off.
Right.
That wouldn't really be right intention?
Not really. because the focus is on cultivating genuine compassion and acting from a place of genuine care for others, not for personal gain or recognition.
So it's about aligning our actions with our values.
That's it.
Okay, that makes sense. Now let's talk about Socrates.
Yeah.
The article mentioned the Socratic filter for speech, which is it true? Is it necessary?
Right.
And that seems to fit perfectly with right speech.
It does. Socrates, like the Buddha, recognized the power of words to both harm and heal.
Yeah.
And so the Socratic filter encourages us to pause before we speak, to really consider the impact of our words.
It's such a simple tool.
Yeah.
But it's so powerful.
It is.
Okay, so we've got Socrates. Now, what about Aristotle and his virtue ethics?
Right.
How does that connect with right action?
Well, Aristotle believed that consistently choosing virtuous actions shapes our character over time. Similarly, right action isn't just about following rules. It's about developing a pattern of ethical behavior.
So it becomes who you are.
Yeah, it becomes ingrained in who we are.
Not just what you do.
Exactly.
Okay, and let's jump ahead a little bit to Henry David Thoreau and his famous quote, "Live deliberately."
Yeah.
That seems to have a strong connection with right livelihood.
It does. Thoreau's call to live deliberately resonates with the idea of choosing work that aligns with our values and contributes to a meaningful life.
It's about being intentional.
Yes.
With how we spend our time.
Absolutely.
Our energy. And making sure that our work is both ethical and fulfilling.
Right. And it's not just about, you know, finding the perfect job, but it's also about bringing that sense of mindfulness and intention to whatever work we're doing.
Yeah. Even if it's not our dream job.
Yeah.
Okay. Now let's shift gears a bit and talk about Friedrich Nietzsche.
Okay.
He's known for his rather intense ideas. So I'm curious how he fits into this conversation.
Well, Nietzsche's emphasis on finding a why to live, a driving force that gives our lives meaning, connects to the principle of right effort.
Oh.
He believed that having a strong sense of purpose helps us to overcome challenges and persevere through difficult times.
So it's not just about working hard.
Yeah.
It's about knowing why you're working hard.
Exactly.
What are you striving for?
Having that clear sense of purpose gives us the motivation and the resilience to face obstacles and achieve our goals.
Okay, that makes sense. Now let's talk about a more contemporary figure, Eckhart Tolle.
Okay.
His teachings on mindfulness and presence seem to align perfectly with right mindfulness.
They do. Tolle's emphasis on the power of the present moment is a beautiful expression of right mindfulness.
He talks about, you know, escaping the tyranny of our thoughts.
Yes.
And finding peace in the simplicity of being present.
Just being here now.
Yeah. Without judgment or resistance.
Exactly.
Okay. And speaking of peace, let's talk about Thich Nhat Hanh, the Vietnamese Buddhist monk and peace activist.
Right.
He has this great quote, "Peace is every step."
I love that quote.
And that seems to connect with right concentration.
It does. Thich Nhat Hanh taught that mindfulness can be practiced in every moment, even while walking or doing everyday tasks.
Okay.
And that aligns with right concentration, which encourages us to bring focused attention to whatever we're doing.
So finding those pockets of stillness
throughout
the day.
Exactly.
Not just during, you know, formal meditation practice.
Right.
Okay. And finally, we come to the Dalai Lama, the spiritual leader of Tibet.
Yes.
Who really embodies the principles of the Eightfold Path in his life and teachings.
He does.
And his focus on compassion and loving kindness really resonates with the essence of this path.
Yeah.
Which is ultimately about awakening to our true nature and living in harmony with ourselves and the world around us.
That's a beautiful way to put it.
It's amazing to see how all of these principles have been embraced by so many great thinkers throughout history.
It really speaks to the universality of this wisdom and its relevance for all times and cultures.
Well, this has been an incredible deep dive into the Eightfold Path. I feel like I've gained a whole new appreciation for these ancient principles and their relevance for modern life.
I'm so glad to hear that.
Thank you for sharing your insights and your expertise with us.
It's been my pleasure. And I would encourage all of our listeners to explore these principles further and discover how they can be applied to create more balance, purpose, and peace in their own lives.
And with that, we'll wrap up this episode of The Deep Dive. Until next time, keep seeking wisdom wherever you may find it.